everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And welcome to episode 160. It has been quite a while since we were able to record last. I think the last time, Jerry, we had an episode come out was about a month ago or so.
Something like that, yeah. Well, you know, life hits us all, and we all got it at the same time. Good things for both of us, at least.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I've been really busy on the sub, getting it ready to go out for its initial testing. It's going to be weird. We're taking this submarine that has been being built for the past like 4 years or so, and we're going to go put it underwater for the first time. So it's like kind of nerve-wracking, nervous, if you will, but really exciting though to see what everybody has done on board and all the work that they've accomplished coming to putting this multi-near billion-dollar machine underwater and running it through its trials.
Man, that's exciting right there. Seeing the fruits of all y'all's labor coming together, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
But other than that, though, it's just been staying, you know, just hanging out at the house whenever I can get time off, spending good time with the family. My son's in school now, so that's kind of cool and kind of weird also because he's only, like, 3 going on 4, but it's like little kiddos going to school. Wife's taking classes. She's doing great. And yeah, no, everything's going well here outside of the magic community. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. As I told you earlier, I'm gonna tell everyone now, I started working at a prison as a nurse. So I'm a nurse for inmates now.
That is a different kind of nerve-wracking job.
Are you kidding me? I'm not worried about it. Once you've been around TCNs in Afghanistan or Iraq, at least these guys speak English. You know when it's coming.
Nah, that is true. That is true.
It's, you know, it is its own job. You get used to it. Most of my patients are serving life sentences without getting into too much gory detail.
Right.
So most of them have made lives inside the prison. And you'd be surprised what it means to be in a prison. I did not expect it to be what it is.
Okay. Well, like, I take it for the good?
For the good. Like, quick example, our fire department, we have a in-prison fire department. They are all inmates. They are all certified on EMT and fire completely. So for the few of the dudes who actually have shorter sentences and are getting out into the real world, they can work in a fire department. They're actual firefighters. Oh, and from video recordings that I've seen from them, they've actively saved lives.
Oh, that's incredible.
So it's different. You just don't expect it.
Yeah.
It's definitely its own culture shock, but once you kind of get used to it and you see how things are run, it's not so bad.
Okay, nice. No, that's really cool, though. But
as far as magic is concerned, I've been playing at FNM's on Fridays.
Nice.
Still able to do that.
I finally got out for my first FNM last Friday.
Oh, what format?
Modern.
Okay, and what'd you play?
It was a crowd. I ended up playing Crabvine. We had 30 people at this, and they're normal. Like, they normally get 30 to 40 people. Jerry, you might remember the shop. It's Comet Kings here in Virginia Beach.
Yeah, Comet Kings gets loads of people. It's the single biggest store in the Virginia Beach area.
Yep. They have thankfully survived the COVID pandemic. They even had a good crowd for Digimon, the new Digimon card game that came out. They had a couple people playing Pokemon. They had a couple people playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, it is just a very large crowd. Same shop still. The one guy actually recognized me. He's like, "You look like someone who's been here before." It's like, "I was about 5 years ago." And he's like, "Oh, wow." I was like, "Yeah, man, I'm back." And yeah. We chatted for a bit. They were doing great. The pandemic was kind of rough. They saw a couple stores in the area close. A couple of them, you know, like, dwindled severely in business. But a couple other stores have actually thrived on that. Tower of Games in the area, they used to only have a Virginia Beach location. They now have a Newport News location. And it's actually competing very heavily with Atomic Comics in Newport News for the Magic crowd.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Now, they were polite. They made their modern night a different night than Atomic Comics. But a lot of people, though, are only choosing one night to go out. And sadly, it's looking like Tower Games is winning that one.
I mean, the way you get it is you have to offer a prize payout. Someone's offering a better prize payout, clearly.
Yeah. Now
I think that's what it is.
I will say though, they Atomic Comics has improved on their prize support. They've done a really good job, but they're still slowly working back up from their COVID restrictions.
Okay. So in my area, Chicago, we still have three big stores, and all three of the stores are so far apart from each other that they're not really competing with each other.
Good.
Unless you're doing large scale events. In the Northwest Burbs, you have Nerd Rage Gaming. We're yep. aware of them. Everyone knows who NRG is. In a downtown area, you have Pastimes.
I've heard of them.
They've hosted Grand Prix before.
Okay.
They have hosted in Chicago before, but they almost always host in Indianapolis.
Okay.
That's more their thing. They prefer to host down there because it's cheaper in Indiana. It just is. So anytime that they're hosting anything, it's either in Indianapolis or occasionally they'll make their way up to Milwaukee or even Minneapolis. And then my store, which is the one I go to, it's in the south side of Chicago, getting closer to Joliet and the south burbs of Tinley Park and Oakbrook, you have GameStorm. We are currently the biggest store in Chicagoland area because we've been firing events every night of the week.
Oh, wow.
Of 15 or greater people. Modern on Friday being the biggest one, usually about 40 to 50 folks.
That's awesome. Now, when you're doing your 40 or 50 player event, are you also doing a cut the top eight or are you just calling it after five?
It's five rounds. We're not doing six. And it's a cumulative points league system.
Okay.
We're still doing. I just finished first in the last one. So I'm in first place in our last league. On October 10th, we're doing our cut the top eight, our top eight cut play. I will get to go first in every round.
Oh, that's fantastic. And now it's set up where you play like different formats throughout those rounds, right? Or is it one format for the rounds?
For the Friday league?
Yeah.
That's modern, modern, modern.
Okay, so it's all modern. There's no change. Yeah. Okay.
No change. And they have one also for limited. They also have the limited top eight cut going on there too.
Nice.
And that one does change. The newest set is the one they do.
Okay.
So they get a few more changes in how they draft and such. Some players do better in other sets. They just kind of, you know, they get the grasp on it before everyone else.
Nice.
But in modern, I'm king. Like, I'm the bee's knees. I did it all on the back of Living End, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, man, Living End is... That's one I need to... I'm almost finished with it, the updated list, which you're playing. I've been jamming Crabvine, so both of us playing out of the graveyard. I was actually pretty surprised. I didn't think I was going to do as good as I did with Crabvine. I ended up going 3-2. My two losses were to Esper Reanimator. And that's just like a back and forth, really, who can do their thing. I got greedy in game three, kept a one lander. I had a force negation in hand. I had a prize amalgam to pitch to it. And I had a surgical extraction also. So I could like kind of combat what they were doing.
What's even better is that the grave hate card of choice right now, which is endurance, you and I can both play around very easily.
Yeah.
Endurance against you is just a one-time Wheel of Sun and Moon, and you can just get back into it with a single copy of Glimpse the Unthinkable. And for me, I can sandbag casting Living End long enough to let an Endurance resolve and then cycle a few more idiots and do the thing anyways.
Yep. Yeah, so, like, it's just like a one-turn kind of thing, maybe a two-turner, depending on how else the rest of the board state is. Hammer Time almost felt unwinnable for me.
Hammer Time kind of does that.
It is just a super, super quick, very refined deck. And we kind of saw this coming up to beginning of last year, especially whenever we got the Colossus Hammer come out. And we had ways to be able to just get equipment early on field. Was Steel Shaper's Gift, I think, was another card that really helped that deck.
Well, it's a card. That's a card that doesn't even see any play in the deck anymore.
Yeah, which is surprising. I thought for sure they were still going to be playing a book of them, but they're not.
It's actually like the worst card in the whole list now. You're better off just playing Ingenious Smith because it puts a body on the battlefield, and Urza's Saga, when it chapter 3s with a Sigarda's Aid, you get to stick the hammer on your thing.
Yeah.
Like, so it's completely irrelevant now. Like, Steel Shaper's Gift was good for a while, but now I would rather just saga my way into my deck.
Yeah.
Like, my deck is great. Like, this is where Affinity went, boys. So if you used to play Affinity and you haven't picked up on Modern again, play this. This is your Affinity deck of the format.
And it's not even that expensive of a deck, really. Hang on, let me pull up the metagame on MTG Goldfish here. You're looking at about $850 to $900, depending on the build. Maybe closer to $1,000 and some...
You're dropping most of your money on Stoneforge Mystics and probably Mishra's Baubles.
So Stoneforge Mystic, Esper Sentinel is another one that's seeing a lot of good play too, out of Modern Horizons 2. Sigarda's Aid, that's up there. You're looking at about $50 for a playset. Ink Moth Nexus is spiking in price right now too. You're looking at about $44 a copy again.
Oh wow, okay. So yeah, there you go. Like, okay, so the deck still holds a price tag, but it is out of all of the best deck, out of the top 10 decks in Modern, it's one of two decks that's at least below $1,000 that you could slowly get into in a reasonable amount of time.
Yep. The only other one up here in the top 10 is, to no surprise, Burn. Burn is always going to be a cheap deck.
Yeah, Leah slid into top 8 as well.
Nice.
She's going to be my round 1 opponent in double elimination.
Aww.
I feel bad. Because Burn's a pretty good matchup for me.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm on the play.
Now, a few new cards I did add to my Crabvine list was... I got a couple copies of Altar of Dementia. And I have a one of Life from the Loam.
Yeah, sure. Buy back Bloody G and Prized Amalgams over and over again.
Yep.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah, and the Altar of Dementia, I was able to get some good fun with that. I fatal pushed my own Gravecrawler and then recast him. That wasn't with the Altar of Dementia. That was a different reasoning. That was just to get some Vengevines out on the field, and I had to kill my own dude for it. But being able to sack, like, Bloodghasts to get some mill action going, and then play a land, bring him back onto the field, and then sack him again, and then fetch with that land, and then bring him back again. Like, it's, what was that, 4, 8, 12, I got 12 mills at that point on myself to dig through and try to combat against, they had an Ensnaring Bridge out.
Okay.
But...
That's a thing.
Yeah. I beat the Delverless, so the Is It Tempo. My opponent
Delver of Secrets is now a conditionally worse card in every one of these decks in Legacy, Modern, and even Vintage.
Like, yeah.
You play Darcy, which is now the affectionate nickname of Dragon's Rage Channeler.
Yeah, that took me a little bit to catch on to. I was like, what is this Darcy? And then I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense now.
Yeah, that card is just a better, like, even though it's not, the only downside is it's not blue. It's the only downside. But it requires very little work to actually get it to flip into its 3-3 form.
Yep.
It's always connecting because it's flying. And it's just easier to get going than a Delver of Secrets.
That and the surveil mechanic attached to it also is fantastic.
Right. You're almost certainly never going to have a dead draw.
Yep. And what's the flyer they have in there, the 7 drop? That they generally only play...
Murktide Regent.
Oh my goodness. I had no idea about that card the first time I, like, got into Modern again recently.
It's a blue Tombstalker.
Yeah, it is.
All it is blue. Like, Tombstalker saw all this play years ago. The only reason it doesn't see play now in Legacy, or Modern for that matter, is because it's not blue.
Yeah, that was a shock to see.
I think if you wanted to play a Rakdos deck now, I think you could actually play Tombstalker now.
Ooh.
I don't think there's a reason not to. And it's super easy to get going off of your Darcy, so who cares?
But they have a couple of mill players at Comet Kings. And so I sat down with my round one opponent. He's on this Delverless Delver. And he sees me play Crab and pass. And he's excited. And I was kind of confused at first. I saw the turn one Darcy. I was like, oh, okay, he's on this. Got it. And so I play my land, and he reaches for the top. I was like, oh, no, target myself. And he's like,
the look of horror on his face.
Yeah, he's like, what? And my flip was two Vengevines and a Narc Amoeba.
And get he's right, like, scrub!
And he's like, oh, no. I was like, trigger on the stack, fetch. And he's like, what? And I was like, Narc Amoeba trigger on the stack. I'm going to be fetching right now. He's like, what? Oh, okay. So I did my fetch, land enters, and I hit a prized amalgam. And, like, yeah, one of the few times it actually worked. And he's like, oh, that's good. I was like, uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, you cast two creatures that turn to play a Vengevine and kill them?
So that turn, no. I didn't get the Vengevines out until the following turn.
We weren't that good, yeah, but we were close.
I wish. Yeah, no. Right, so I did have the Gravecrawler in hand, though, and I had another one in the yard. So the follow-up turn, I was able to cast the two Gravecrawlers and beat face.
He died.
Yeah.
He died. So my Get'em story, last week was the start of the new season for our Modern League. So I changed decks to throw people off. I played Crashing Footfalls.
Ooh.
I took the Magister, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I took his list, I took his 75 and changed 7 cards in it. And this was an absolute, like, everyone was like, wait, what? Because I threw them all off with this one. So in his sideboard, he has 3 Blood Moon, 4 Endurance, 4 Mystical Dispute, 4 Force of Vigor. I took out the 4 Mystical Dispute and the 3 Blood Moons for 3 Lucky Clovers and 4 copies of Lovestruck Beast.
Wait, what?
I played Adventure Dot Deck out of the sideboard. Okay.
You so enjoy that too much. You enjoy these transformative sideboards a little too much.
This is what happens when you have Chuckle... Okay, I can't say that on here. Chuckle...
Yep.
Stars, you know, playing... Like, you have one guy siding in, like, 4 copies of Flusterstorm for me. Again, when I was playing Living End.
Yeah.
I still beat him, but I was like, wait, you sided... You went and, like, on top of that, this guy also bought them that day. He spent $200-something on a playset of overpriced Flusterstorms to just beat me. And still lost. So, that was 2 weeks ago. Last week, I ended up firing off, you know, I was like, okay, I still want to play a Cascade deck. And you see people going in for their Chalices and their Flusterstorms and their something that, like, I know there's something out there that they'll have, like, a Silence or something. They're, like, because I saw Hammer Time players citing in Silences for Cascade decks. So I was like, okay, since people are going to do this, I'm not going to protect my combo. I'm just going to side it out completely. So when he has his one blue source open and I go end of turn Violent Outburst, the look on his face is, oh, I'm going to get him with this Flusterstorm. And then I show Lucky Clover. He's like, wait, what?
Nice.
Then I did the Lovestruck Beast thing, made 2 human tokens, and I buried him in advantage. Because, you know, the whole deck plays a bunch of adventure creatures. So let's just do that.
Now, Modern's been a lot of fun to play, and even more so, Tyler has been playing some Modern lately. I believe he's currently even streaming right now, but let's see here. I'm just curious to see if he is. He should be live. Yes, Tyler _ Snapcast, occasionally playing Magic, mainly playing like Smite and things like that, but he 5-0'd a league yesterday with Amulet Reanimator.
I know. First off, Amulet Titan on its own right now is not a deck I would play in this Modern metagame. I would never touch it right now.
No, and even his one opponent, who is in the hunt for, like, top trophies for the season, if you will.
Yeah.
He even made a comment in their chat, like, didn't anybody tell this guy Titan's not viable? Well, obviously, Tyler ended up winning. But yeah, whenever you have your Urza Sagas, you're able to get Cookbook, and then you can pitch your Titan into the yard and then persist it back.
Like, he found a way to at least keep Titans on the battlefield. That was the issue with the Amulet Titan builds, is that they couldn't do it. Unholy Heat kills every creature in Modern.
Uh-huh.
It really does. Except, like, if they don't have it, then they lose the game to cheap 1-mana red creatures. And Tarmogoyf, because of how decks are being built now, actually gets bigger than Unholy Heat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, usually Tarmogoyf is connecting for 6 in this metagame. Crazy, right? Like, back in the day, Tarmogoyf was always referred to as a 4-5 for 2. In this metagame, it's easily a 6-7 for 2. It takes no effort to do it.
Yeah, so that's
either being so fast that they must have the unholy heat, or you have to be bigger than an unholy heat to be playable in the metagame. And in this case, Tyler figured out that if you stick reanimator tricks in the deck, that you can always have a Titan on the battlefield. And that I think he's onto something with that.
Yeah, and it's still running some of the standard like mono green Titan package, if you will. You got the Dried of Elysian Grove still in here. You still got Arbor Elves. You got the Summoner's Pact. Looks to be about 30 lands or so in the land package. But having Urza's Saga, being able to grab yourself another Amulet of Vigor is nice. I was able to see that in Durham when I got third at the event down there. And, of course, I mean, just Valakuts and Mountain Beats is always great whenever you have Dried of Elysian Grove out. He also likes to run one of Handwire Battlements for his haste.
I do like that as well.
Yeah, because really, he doesn't have the other typical package, if you will, of the Sunhome Fortress and I can't remember the other one. Slayer Stronghold. Yeah.
So, and he's doing that because he's got such, it's not a black splash. Like, black is actually a part of his deck. He's doing both Unmarked Grave and Persist.
Yep. And to help out with that, in case anyone is curious, he has a one of Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth in there too, just to make everything swamps if need be.
Does he have a single copy of the Yavimaya as well?
He is not running a single copy of Yavimaya. He does have two copies of Castle Garenbrig, though.
Jeez, it's, I love the deck. I think he's at least found a way to make Titan playable in a world that's very hostile to big mana decks.
Yeah. If you're curious to see the full 75, you can definitely check it out on Twitter, at Tyler Snapcast and at Team Snapcast. You'll be able to see the recent tweet and his update. He beat Tron, White-Black Reanimator, Burn, Blue-Black Fairies, and Shadow.
Jeez, so, that's not a modern meta you expect to see.
No, not one bit. And that's one of the interesting things, too, with these leagues is sometimes you get metagames, sometimes you don't. So getting a 5-0, it's like the first five rounds at a Grand Prix, if you will.
You just never know what you're going to get, like three mono-red prison decks when you're playing Burn.
Yep. All right, well, let's move on here with some things to talk about. First up, SCG Con is coming up in 6 weeks. It's looking like we're gonna have at least two members show up. Both Tyler and Sean are qualified for the Invitational. They did so in early 2020. And for those who are unsure, if you did qualify for the Invitational in the 2020 SCG Season 1 opens while they were still going on before everything shut down for COVID, they're honoring those qualifications for this Invitational. And they've also been doing the SCG events on Arena, or you can also qualify for SCG Con if Arena is your flavor, which sadly for me, I have completely fallen out of Arena.
Yeah. I guess that leads us into our next topic.
Yeah.
Is that a good place?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so initial thoughts on Innistrad Midnight Hunt. This is where I'm alluding to, guys. I love the set. I love the rotation that's going to happen, and Standard's going to be a whole new world. You know, we're no longer in the world of Throne of Eldraine Adventures, invalidating everything you could possibly do in all the other sets. We're also out of Ikoria, so no more companion shenanigans. At all. I don't think companions saw too much play, but except for Yorion, so there'll be no more incentive to play 80 card decks. Nothing like that. But then there's the problem with how Innistrad was designed, in my opinion. Out of the 20 mythics in the set, 19 of them are almost certainly standard staples or very close. This makes it almost impossible to have a tiered deck list on Arena without shuffling out $600, $700 to hit the requisite amount of Mythic wild cards. I'll use Mono Red as an example. Mono Red typically is a very cheap and easy deck to get into, but when you must play four copies of Bloodthirsty Adversary, four copies of Flame Skull, and then four copies of Moonveil Regent, and then sideboarded copies of Zariel, you know, that's anywhere between 13 to 16 mythic wild cards in your mono red deck. And it doesn't even include the possible playability that is Sunstreak Phoenix. Like, if for some reason you're able to flip between day and night a lot in a mono red shell or a red X shell, Sunstreak Phoenix becomes a very good version of a, I would almost say like a Hellspark elemental that continuously comes back because your Unearth cost is 2 and you're getting 4 power instead of 3 in the air. That's amazing to me. Yeah. But it's also sad. Like, that's a lot of mythic wild cards you're dumping into one archetype. Now, imagine, like, just mono white in and of itself. Intrepid Adversary is an auto-playable in every mono white deck involving lots of little creatures, which is what the mono white deck was beforehand. But if you're playing Intrepid Adversary, a 2-drop, then you're playing the Sigardian Savior with it to get it back and trigger Intrepid Adversary again for late game beatdown plan. So, too many mythics are too playable, and I don't think it's feasible to play on Arena Standard just because of the cost.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a challenge, and that's one thing that we've seen a lot of when it comes to Arena, and it's always been our gripes, right, is once you spend those wilds, like, that's it. There's nothing you can do. There's no way to get any kind of reimbursement. And I'm not saying, like, you know, be able to turn them in or whatnot, but there's no trades. There's no dust mechanic. There's nothing. Once you burn a wild, that's it. And sometimes getting those wild cards is incredibly difficult, especially if you don't have the monetary funds to dump into the game.
Yeah, that just too much right there.
Now,
if you're curious, the one mythic that I don't think is playable, I think could be playable just because it's a land. I think Hostile is like 50% of the way there. Like, there has to be enough incentive to play a sacrifice deck to play this card. And if there is, it's fine as like a 1 or 2 of. Just because it's extra value in places it's very hard to interact with.
Yeah, now there is Historic though, right? Like, Historic could utilize Hostile.
Yeah, the Historic deck, the Historic Jund Sacrifice deck could play a single copy of it, sure.
Okay.
Why not? I wouldn't inundate the deck with that because it is, you know, we're trying to play Korvold.
Yeah.
That card does have 3 colors in its mana cost. If you can, you know, if it usually it's a 24 land deck, you cut a spell and add a Hostile. So, but that's the thing is, like, none of these mythics are extremely splashy and meant for commander types or brawl. They're all meant for standard. Every one of them are meant to be played in the standard format, in some form or fashion.
Gotcha. Now, one thing I will say I kind of like about this is the slow lands, if you will. The dual cycle that we have. So we've had our fast lands, but now, yeah, it's the complete opposite.
Yep. The opposite of the fast lands. I can't believe we never thought of this design space before. It just kind of seems obvious when you look at them now.
Yeah, so, I mean, depending on your grip, like, in like a modern Rakdos list, like having a couple Haunted Ridge might be good because it ties well with Blackleaf Cliffs. Same thing like Rockfall Vale. That's the Gruul one. Haunted Ridge being the obviously the Rakdos one. But like having these are very nice. It has the text for those who don't know. It enters the battlefield tapped unless you control 2 or more other lands. So that's why I like dubbed slow land.
If Ad Nauseam becomes a deck again, we play a copy of Shipwrecked Martian Deserted Beach. Because there was always the issue that the fourth land never came into play untapped unless it was a shock land. And this is the replacement.
Yeah.
So if for some reason Ad Nauseam becomes a modern deck again and Simeon Spirit Guide gets the unban, we have a sweet new land to play. So that I'm a fan of.
And I do think it is of worthy note, Field of Ruin is printed again.
Yes. So we aren't going to get just sidewaysed by mono white book. That deck, I think, when the format rotates, they will unban Book of Exalted Deeds. If you, for those of you who remember or don't remember, the Book of Exalted Deeds was pre-banned in Standard 2022, thanks to the people who had pre-access to the set. It was the D&D set. And they figured out basically a Splinter Twin-like combo that was impossible to interact with. with a what is it called again? The Book of Exalted Deeds and the copy of the land, the colorless land from Kaldheim that is a creature, but it's a snow creature as well.
Oh, okay.
It becomes a creature of any creature type. So because it's an angel, what they were doing is they would activate Book of Exalted Deeds targeting the Faceless Haven as a creature and then pass turn. It's where it's just a land. And in the format, there was only one way to interact with lands, and that was Cleansing Wildfire.
Gotcha.
So if you were not in a red deck with Cleansing Wildfires, you were losing to this Angel's Pile. So now that Field of Ruin is in the format, I think they can safely unban it, and it is a pretty, you know, I think it's an acceptable deck. It's the best life gain deck they'll have ever printed in the history of Magic.
Okay.
Because it'll, you know, Book of Exalted Deeds has a really awesome series of effects on it where if you gain 3 or more life in a turn, you get an angel. You get a 3/3 angel. That is a value engine that can be exploited where it's way better than the copy of the 2-mana Leonins, or
yeah.
I guess now Shining Unicorn is the choice, where it's just a fragile creature that gets killed unless you untap with it. You're not really worried about a 3-mana artifact getting targeted down in Standard.
Gotcha. So that's for like Standard Impact and whatnot.
Yep.
But we're both very big into Modern, and I would say that's really where most of the team likes to gravitate towards is Modern. And there's quite a few cards in this set that you've picked out, and there's a couple that I really like too for Modern. So let's talk about those a little bit, and then we'll probably just go through and wrap up the episode overall.
Sure. All right. So first card I want to mention is Malevolent Hermit. It's a 1 and a blue for a 2/1 human wizard. It has a blue, sacrifice Malevolent Hermit, colon, counter target non-creature spell unless its controller pays 3. And then it has the disturbed mechanic, which is 2 and a blue. You may cast this card from your graveyard for its disturbed cost, and you transform it into Benevolent Geist on the backside. It's a 2/2 flyer. Non-creature spells you control can't be countered. If Benevolent Giant would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it. This is a human version of Glenelendra Archmage, and it's much more cost effective.
Ooh.
So, do I think humans is any more playable than it was yesterday with this? No. But it's another tool in its toolbox. It's actually like, if Renin 6 weren't legal or weren't around, this card would see a lot of play in humans.
No, I like it. I really enjoy it. Just, you get the body, you get the ability for countering the spell, and then also just the recurrence mechanic that it has with it too.
Right, because sometimes humans would get blown out by a sweeper, and in this case, you can at least get some value out of it from the graveyard with a 2/2 flyer.
Exactly.
We are okay with that. And plus, Glenelendra Archmage hasn't been playable in Modern for about 9-10 years now. So I think it needed a kind of power crept update, and this is pretty close to that.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a fan.
Speaking of tribal decks, another card I wanted to point out was Spectral Adversary, the blue mythic in the multi-kicker adversary cycle of cards. Has Flash Flying 2/1, and it's a spirit. When it enters the battlefield, you may pay 2 any number of times, 1 and a blue, that is. When you pay this cost 1 or more times, put that many +1/+1 counters on the adversary. Then up to that many other target artifacts, creatures, and or enchantments phase out. This gives you the ability to protect your own things or prevent yourself from dying. And it interacts with Aether Vial in a way to where, because it enters the battlefield, is when it triggers for you to pay the additional costs.
Yep, that is the key point I was about to point out on this one, is it is not so much of a kicker cost, if you will. It is just a enter the battlefield, goes on the stack, and you may pay that as many times as you wish.
The absolute rudest thing you can do is Spectral Adversary, pay the cost with a activate Vial, violent an adversary, pay the cost, and phase out your hammer so I can block your idiot.
Yep.
So I can see that being a play that happens a few times, at least for those spirits holdouts.
Yeah, I know. I like it.
What cards are you interested in, Rob? What about you?
One of the main cards that has stood out for me is actually a blue common, and that is Otherworldly Gaze. So for one blue, it's an instant. Look at the top three cards of your library, put any number of them into your graveyard, and the rest on top of your library in any order. And it has a flashback cost of one and a blue. Where I really like this card is in, actually, Vengevine. Or Crabvine. Because many times I've kept a greedy hand with, like, one land and a crab. And generally, I don't get to draw into another land. Or I'll keep this with a one lander, and or I'll keep a one lander and have Venture Deeper. And whenever I go to mill four on myself, I generally pass about two lands. So now instead, I can use my three flex spots, which are currently taken by Altar of Dimension, Life from the Loam, throw in Otherworldly Gaze, and set up my next series of draws, and possibly still be able to trigger a Narc Amoeba or a Creeping Chill, because the cards are going from the library to the graveyard. They don't go into any other zone in between. I'm not exiling them and then putting them in. It's just I get to look and then put.
Crazy thought. I don't think that's supposed to be flex in your deck. I think you're just supposed to play four.
I got to figure out a fourth card to take out then.
I know. I think you're supposed to just play four because it, the way it reads is perfect for you.
Yeah.
It's even an instant. So you can play your land, pass turn, at the end of your second main phase, activate Otherworld Gaze. I see a land, Narc Amoeba, and a Prized Amalgam. Like,
yeah.
I think that the this card is way too high up on the needs list of things to do in your deck.
Okay.
It's the best way for you to mill yourself without milling your lands.
Yep. And that's always been an issue that I've seen a lot of the times whenever Crabvine players have lost. It's because we mill too many of our lands.
Like, for a while, I was going to tell you that you were supposed to play Consider, but this is just better for your deck.
Yeah.
Because it mills more cards, which is what you're trying to do. That's your end goal.
What else do you got, Jerry?
Okay. This is a card that is both interest to you and to my significant other for her dredge playstyle. Willowgeist. It's a one green mana for a 1/1 with, it's a Treefolk Spirit. Interesting creature types there. Has Trample. When one or more cards leave your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on Willowgeist. When Willowgeist dies, you gain life equal to its power. So I did some testing with this card. I tested it in Dredge here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I turn one, played a Willowgeist. Past turn, my opponent played a land. It was a tapped land. I think it was the Jeskai one. I can't remember. But he passed turn to me. I go Cathartic Reunion, discard two Stinkweed Imps, Dredge 5, trigger Willowgeist once, hit Creeping Chill, Stinkweed Imp, Narc Amoeba. Each Creeping Chill, individual Creeping Chill, triggers Willowgeist, the Narc Amoeba triggered the Willowgeist. At that point, I knew that Willowgeist is a mainstay in Dredge.
Yeah, and I saw some back and forth, you know, some people weren't truly convinced or whatnot, but like just that power, being able to have it.
It's like Ragavan for Dredge decks. Like, if this goes unanswered, you're dead. Yeah. On average, this thing is connecting for 6 to 8 in our graveyard strategies.
And not only that, but it's whenever one or more cards just leave your graveyard. So whenever you dredge, that card left your graveyard. Yes. There's another play. Like, it should be growing every turn.
Just about, yep. Each individual instance of Dredge, each individual Creeping Chill, each individual Narc Amoeba, each single Prized Amalgam, will trigger the Willowgeist individually each time. So if you, same thing with Bloodghasts and Silver Smoke Ghouls. The thing that people were thinking about is like, well, this doesn't really work with Life from the Loam. Well, who cares? I dredge three with Life from the Loam, trigger it once, and then I return three lands to my hand with it, trigger it once. Who cares?
Yeah.
I still got two power out of it.
Yep.
Or there's also people saying it doesn't work with Ox of Agonis. Well, actually, fam, it does. It works super well with Ox of Agonis. So in order to put Ox onto the battlefield, you have to pay its escape cost. Escaping cards from your graveyard, yeah, it's a bunch all at once, but it still triggers it one time. Then Ox entering the battlefield is another individual trigger, which is one time. Then when you discard cards and start dredging again, that's more triggers on your Willowgeist.
Yeah.
I'm convinced we're supposed to be playing this card. just because of the sheer power of it.
No, I like it. My only concern is, and you know, this is always an entering argument for like naysayers or anybody like that, is all the tests that I would say it fails. Fatal Push, Prismatic Ending, Bolt, Unholy Heat, even without Delirium. Like it's,
so does Ragavan, but it's a $400 to play set. Like that argument is flat.
Okay.
This is a, if you do not answer this, you are probably going to die. Super fast. It even triggers when your opponent uses an endurance on you. Think about that.
Hmm. Like yeah.
It's just kind of automatic. Like, or if your opponent plays like, this card invalidates Wheel of Sun and Moon completely. Like, I can just play this into a Wheel of Sun and Moon and my Willowgeist is going to be like a 20-20. Super fast.
I like it. No, I enjoy it. I definitely want to give it a shot.
The only argument that you could give me out of Crabvine is that it's not a zombie.
Yeah.
That's the argument that I would almost believe.
And that's why I won't consider the card, is because I have too much I need to do with zombies, and for the self-milling aspect that I don't think I, of all my creatures, this still worse than all of them.
Right, your list is too tight to where Dredge isn't that tight. We've been on Shriekhorn for years, but we've also seen so many 2-drop variants that let you dredge so many cards being printed that I think that's where we're supposed to be. Is turn 1 Willowgeist or Shriekhorn, both are fine, into a turn 2 Cathartic Reunion, or in this case, the next card on our list, Cathartic Pyre.
Yes, and Cathartic Pyre is wonderful. I love it. Yep. I've already got it pulled up right here.
Yep. This is the be-all, end-all, the thing you're supposed to do in Dredge. If you could do Cathartic Reunion at instant speed and play a round Force of Negation, would you do it?
Oh, absolutely.
If your Cathartic Reunion could target a Voidwalker and kill it, would you do it?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We got them both in Cathartic Pyre. It's a 1 in a red instant. Has 2 modes. Choose one. Deal 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker, or discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards. The other key part, remember, it says discard up to 2 cards. So if you have a terrible mulligan where you like mulligan down to 3, and your hand is like land, imp, pyre, and you draw your second land, you could still cast the Cathartic Pyre and do the thing.
Yep.
So Dredge decks will probably no longer be playing Thrilling Discovery, as that card was really pushing the mana boundaries, where we were forcing ourselves into white and we were already having to force ourselves into double red with a green splash for like double red to cast both Conflagrates and Oxes or Oxen. Ha! I'm good at English, guys. But Cathartic Pyre is going to replace that. Even though it gets one less card, it has so many options attached to it that options is what makes a card powerful.
Yeah. No, the duality of this card is the biggest thing that I really enjoy. And that is, I'd say, barely ahead of it being instant speed. Even if this was sorcery speed, I have to choose one, deal 3 damage, or the discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many. Both of those are already fantastic. They slapped instant speed on this, and I think just made it even better.
Yeah. Being able to play around Force of Negation is a huge boon.
Yeah.
Are there any more cards you want to talk about, Rob, before we hit mines?
No, you hit my other one, and that was Cathartic Pyre, actually. Aww. Yeah, both Cathartic Pyre and the Otherworldly Gaze. Those are the two big ones, which is weird because it's, you know, uncommon and a common that I'm more excited about in this set. I will point out Delver Secrets art, I'm kind of a fan of. I really want to see this in foil, especially the insectoid side. I think that lightning is going to look beautiful in a nice foil.
I just want them to make a full art version of it.
Yes.
That's really all I want. Let's see, the other two cards. This one I won't harp on too much, because we've already seen a version of it in the... I remember in Ravnica, the RTR series, there was a split card with Diffuse Mechanic. Beck and Call, that's what it was called.
Yep.
Beck and Call was a card, so this is kind of a modified version of that, but I think it's slightly better. It's a Rite of Harmony. For a green and white, it's an instant. Whenever a creature or an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control this turn, draw a card. And then it has flashback of two green and white. So this is in a series of attempts to try to make fixed Glimpse the Unthinkables. Or not Glimpse the Unthinkable, Glimpse of Nature. And this is probably the most powerful one they've ever printed because it has flashback on it. It allows you to continue to do the thing when you need more creatures and more cards in your hand. So Elves, I could see doing a white splash to play four copies of this.
Yeah.
It's easy for them to make the mana. I don't think there's a reason for them not to do it. And it's not when the creature is cast, it's when they enter the battlefield. So it's going to give you draws off of your collected company. It'll give you draw off of a Turn Timber Symbiosis. It will give you draws off of creature tokens if you play, I don't know, Imperious Perfect. It will draw you two cards off of your copy of Dwinin's Elite. So it does a little bit more than Glimpse of Nature does. You think I'm right on this one?
I think it'd be worth testing. I'd be curious to see what the Elves players would be willing to remove for this. But you're right, though. Like, they really don't have too much of a challenge generating the mana, being able to get this, and then also still being able to get more creatures onto the field. Being able to then draw into more cards, possibly being able to generate more mana. Like, you can go into a really good, almost elf ball, if you will, with this. And it would be interesting. Now, Legacy, I think, maybe. Would Legacy want this a little bit more? Just because of their ability to play Gaia's Cradles?
No, the deck's too tight.
Okay.
You have Glimpse of Nature. You're just going to play that.
Gotcha.
Like, Beck was legal in Modern, but Beck and Call is a sorcery. So, I don't know if being an instant is necessary, but then again, if you have six mana at the end of your turn, I go Beck, Call, Collecting Company.
Yeah.
And then on my turn, Flashback, not Beck, Call, sorry.
Rite of Harmony.
Rite of Harmony, Collecting Company. Do the thing, draw a couple bonus cards, and then flashback Rite of Harmony and play those creatures and start going off again. Like, that's a thing you could not do with Beck Call. And Beck and Call was also in blue, which Elves wanted no piece of.
Right. No, it'd definitely be worth it. I'm going to have to talk to Jeff, our newest team member, and he's a big Elves player, and see what his thoughts are on this.
Yeah, he's a man of culture, I see.
Yes. He does Elves, Tron, and Eldrazi Tron.
Last Modern card, Memory Deluge.
Ooh.
This is a rare instant. Its cost is blue and two. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast a spell. Put two of them into your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in any order, and has a flashback of 5/2 blue. This is the closest thing we're going to get to Dig Through Time, and I think this is still playable. Like, this is a better Factor Fiction because it doesn't give your opponent any choices. Even though Factor Fiction usually winds up somewhere in your favor, Memory Deluge keeps your opponents from getting that information at all.
Yeah.
So, and I almost think that the Ad Nauseam combo deck is playable with this card in Modern. You take out the Ad Nauseams and you play this. It costs one less, and you can easily generate 7 mana to do the thing at the end of your opponent's turn to put the necessary cards in your hand to win the game.
You said you're taking out Ad Nauseam?
Yeah, at this point, I like to play the deck here and there. I haven't actually casted an Ad Nauseam in so long in the deck that I think it's wasted space. That half the time, I'm wishing that it's like something like a Memory Deluge or a Factor Fiction.
Okay. So for those then who aren't sure, how are you winning if you don't have the namesake of the deck in the deck?
It's Spoils combo. It's Spoils of the Vault, Angel's Grace, or Phyrexian Unlife, and Athassa's Oracle in your hand. Or yeah. Spoils, Grace, Spoils. That'll win it, then have 5 mana available will also do it.
Yeah.
You Grace, Spoils name, Oracle, then Spoils your deck away. There's many ways. All paths lead to Rome. And the thing is, the format is so aggressive still that I'm never casting Ad Nauseam for anything. It just doesn't do anything anymore. So I would rather spend 4 mana on a Memory Deluge.
So what you're saying is we're going to have Doverless Delver, we're going to have ad nauseum less ad nauseum.
Sure. I mean, it's going to take forever to get them to do anything because those guys in that Facebook page are hard-headed.
Titanless Titan. I mean, we can go for days.
We can do this forever. Those are some hard-headed goons right there. They do not want to get off of things. And I'm like, guys, there's a reason our deck sucks right now, and it's because we're playing this dead instant for 5 mana that we're never casting because we die when we cast it. Like, it's not, you're just trying to draw like a few cards, like you're trying to look for certain pieces, but every time I've seen someone do it without the unlife on the battlefield to try to get it for value, it used to be where we would always get something out of it. In this case, it never happens. I just watch them die on stream. Like, okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
You lose. Surprise.
Well, I think it'd definitely be worth us getting that built and trying it out in a league or even just pickup games just to see how ad nauseum less ad nauseum can fare.
Right. Now, to be honest, I haven't tested this yet. This is all theory crafting.
Oh, right.
However, right now, I'm not trying to cast a 5-mana instant that kills me. It just doesn't work. Three more cards to talk about. These are not modern related.
Okay.
But for vintage, I think that Poppet Stitcher is a vintage all-star. And I've been pretty good on my vintage hits recently. So I'd like to keep that going. This is one you don't want to miss. It's a 2 and a blue for a 2/3 human wizard. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 3 or more creature tokens, you may transform Poppet Stitcher. And on its backside, it's the Poppet Factory. Creature tokens you control lose all abilities and have base power and toughness 3/3. The beginning of your upkeep, you may transform Poppet Factory. This is a blue monastery mentor.
Yeah, and it took me a couple times of reading on Poppet Factory, but Poppet Factory has the may ability associated with it.
Right. What's going to wind up happening is, because the tokens never had haste, and that was never a problem, but the Turbo Xerox decks, they're going to play a Poppet Stitcher. They're going to play like an Ancestral, they're going to play like a Mox Ancestral Recall, draw some cards. They draw some cards off that, hold up, protect it with Daze and Force of Will, make a few zombies. On their next turn, they flip up the Poppet Factory, and then they're connecting for 11, or not connecting for 9 to 12 damage, which is what Monastery Mentor was doing anyways. But this is a blue version of that. So your Force of Wills and Force Negations now have extra blue cards to toss away. The only downside is they don't have Prowess, but I don't think that matters because this is a blue card.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Turbo Xerox decks are going to play their one Monastery Mentor because that's what they're restricted to, but they're going to play their 4 Poppet Stitchers until it's restricted to 1. Because it's free. It's just free bodies all over the place.
Actually, there is one card I did miss for Modern. Sure. I want to bring up real quick. And where are we? Faithless Mending. I believe it is. Where are you? The blue-white Faithless Looting?
Right.
If you will. Sorry.
Faithful Mending,
yeah. Yeah, okay, Faithful Mending, yeah. So, a lot of the talk I've been seeing with this card is actually in the Esper Reanimator decks. For them to be able to just fuel more discard to get their Archon back or whatever their win con they're trying to get onto the field is.
Right. It lets you do the things. I mean, Faithful Mending sets you up for Goryeo's Vengeance type shenanigans as well. Yeah. Flashback of 3 is freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really like about it is, we still get the flashback cost with it. They did increase it, so it's no longer one drop like Faithless Looting, sadly. But you do also gain 2 life, which sometimes for these Esper Reanimator decks, they need that extra little bit in order to seal the deal.
Yeah, that's all they needed, just that little bit extra push them through.
Yep. But it'll be interesting to see what it does. Do I think it's going to be major? Maybe. I don't know. The Reanimator decks haven't always stuck around for long. Goryeo's Vengeance made a huge impact, and then it slowly went away. We had the original Unburial Rites Gifts Ungiven combo a while back, and like that was there, and then it kind of went away. So I think it's really just a matter of time before there's too much Grave Hate out there to make these Reanimator decks worthwhile.
I mean, I gave you the coolest Reanimator deck ever that plays around Grave Hate.
You did.
So for those who are curious about this, it was a Goryeo's Vengeance Shell done in mono black. So I get to use copies of Grief to like get me there. And I was using the Asmo Kitchen package to have an alternate game plan of make constructs and beat my opponent to death with the constructs and the Asmo, as well as using Underworld Cookbook as a turn one discard outlet or find my discard outlet to put my Gristlebrand in the graveyard. Gristlebrand draw, you know, you do the Gristlebrand thing where you draw a bunch of cards, and I decided to use Soul Spike from Cold Snap. It's a 7-mana instant, black, black, and 5. It has an alternate cost of exile 2 black cards from your hand. I think it's each opponent, or it might say target, not 100% sure, but they lose 4 life and you gain 4 life. So if you connect with the Gristlebrand, you know, put them to 13, draw a bunch of cards, hit 2 copies of Soul Spike, and since it's a mono black deck, you get to use all of your mono black cards to feed it, and then just continue ripping through your deck and kill your opponent.
Yeah, it was definitely fun to play. I don't know how well overall. My first league only went 2-3, the second league I went 3-2 with it, so 5-5 overall. Probably, you know, some misplays here and there. The deck was absolutely fun. A lot of people caught off guard, especially with Soul Spike. I'm sure had that been a paper event, a lot of people would have... What is that? You paid for this? And he's like, yes, I paid actual money for this card. All of about 30 cents a copy.
All 30 cents of it.
Yeah.
And I'm killing you.
Exactly.
This is how you're dying. The other sweet thing was like getting to use Agadeem's Awakening just because it's a... Like, you could pay 3 mana for Agadeem's Awakening to recur Asmo, or you could play it as a land, or you can use it to fuel your Soul Spike. It was like back when Neobrand was a thing and I was using Turn Timber Symbiosis to literally do everything it said. Yep. I had done every possible thing with Turn Timber Symbiosis in that deck that you could do. Did I feed it to a Nourishing Shoal? Absolutely. Did I use it as a land? Absolutely. Did I actually cast the card and flip a Gristlebrand? Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a good time.
I got 2 commander hits here.
Okay.
If you're in mono white, or not mono white, if you're just in some type of white control deck and you need a sweeper for creatures, Vanquish the Horde is the go-to white sweeper in commander forever and all time.
Yes.
In pods of 4, this is easily just going to cost 2 mana. Going to be 2-mana Wrath of God.
Yep. It looks scary at first. It's an 8-drop. It's 6/2 white, but it costs 1 less for each creature on the battlefield.
Yeah, we played Blasphemous Act, which costed 9. So, and Blasphemous Act is an all-star in Commander for this particular reason. So there's no reason this doesn't do the same thing in white.
And then what's your other one?
The other one is Meat Hook Massacre, which is Black Sun Zenith with pure upside. Like, all the black decks are already playing Black Sun Zenith, black, black, and X to put X -1/-1 counters on all creatures, and then they would all die. Meat Hook Massacre has the same cost rate to deal -X -X to all creatures, but it has the added effect that it's an legendary enchantment that stays on the battlefield. Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life, and whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you gain 1 life. So it's just Black Sun Zenith, which was already a staple in those decks, but better.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And, I mean, have fun. Bounce this back to your hand and recast it again.
Yeah, those two were kind of, for those who are really Commander aficionados, really saw them and were like, oh my god, like, I must play this in my black decks. I will play this in all of my white mid-range decks, so on and so forth. But I figured those needed to be pointed out for the crowd.
You know, I might just have to throw this in, I may throw this in Sisay Shrines.
Meat Hook Massacre?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Exactly.
It also, just, like, you don't have to sweep anything with it. Sometimes you can just play it as a black, like, it's a Blood Artist that's a an enchantment.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if I don't, because I run a lot of, like, enchantress, you know, creatures too, so I may not want to make anything minus X, minus X. And then I can use that for my political gains and be like, hey guys, everything is just at minus zero, minus zero. It's okay. You don't have to come after little old me. Just don't kill my creatures. Otherwise, you're all going to lose life.
Right. It's like, it definitely has the ability to keep people away from you, as well as, you know, it's dangerous in its own right. You can't ignore the card, but it's also very, very like, that guy's kind of cool right now. I can't mess with him.
Exactly.
So where Vanquish the Horde is just like, 2-mana reset, let's go.
It will be interesting to see what's going to happen with the sets, with rotation, where everything's going to fall out. And I'm very curious to see what the formats are going to do. I'm hoping we hear more word. SCG Con, sadly, is the only major paper event Star City has announced for the year. I do not believe we're going to get anything else out of them because it is their season-ending event happening in October.
Right.
But fingers crossed, we can get something figured out beginning of 2022 and get back to our nice paper Magic events that we can travel to, interact again, and just have an absolute blast.
Right. So, my final thoughts here. Standard is going to be a monocolor format. Maybe some two-color decks. The mana, I don't think, is good enough for three colors. There are four looting effects that are all playable in Standard. Keep that in mind. Faithful Mending, Sorcerer Class, Cathartic Pyre, and Prismari Command. So there's a lot of looting available in Standard.
Yep.
So graveyard shenanigans abound. Can't count those out. Modern isn't going to have too many huge changes. I think Modern's in a very stable place, and they need to leave it alone. Legacy needs to be fixed. Paper Legacy isn't really a big deal. Yeah, we have Paper Legacy every Saturday at our store, which is nice. And people play with what they own, especially in Legacy because of the cost of the decks. But in the online world, Legacy is just dumb right now. It is all monkey still, all time. Best deck in the format, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
Something's got to be broken up about that pile right there. Kind of like when Underworld Breach entered the format. They needed to break something up from that Jeskai pile. This Jeskai pile needs to... Something's got to go here.
And then a sad note. Everyone's going to have to pour one out. Ikoria, Lair of the Behemoth. Never got to see a major competitive event in paper.
You know what? I'm okay with this.
After the companion nerf?
Not just that. The whole damn set is just like... So, it would have been the absolute worst limited show in a Pro Tour ever.
Yeah.
Gonna come out with that one. Ikoria, Lair of the Behemoths took cycling and made it busted. In limited. Like, just making them colorless made it completely unfair. Every color could do something obnoxious with cycling, to where there was a, like, back when the last time cycling was around in Amonkhet, you could do cycling, but there was a cost to doing it in that format. And this one, there was zero cost. You play the cycling deck, that's it. If you're not doing the cycling deck, then you're probably losing to the cycling deck. Mutate was a bad mechanic. it was basically enchantments but creatures. Like, and we don't even like enchantment auras as it is in Standard, you know? And then the companion issue in and of itself. This is a set I'm glad never saw the light of a competitive event.
Poor Ikoria.
this set sucked for competitive Magic. You know what? If you liked it that much, Sprite Dragon is legal and is still okay in Modern. There you go.
Yeah. And the Ozolith for those that are playing Hardened Scales. There's still a few cards in this set that are pretty decent.
Right. People who say Strixhaven is not impactful. What? That's my other issue. Like, is it Dragons is like the best deck day one going into the format? Like, this is a pile of cards that didn't really lose much.
Yeah.
And it gets to play Galazeth Prismari, Magma Opus, Prismari Command, and Creative Outburst and Expressive Iteration. Like, half your freaking deck is in this format. So don't tell me that. And then all the Learn decks, the Golgari Learn decks that people are trying to pull together. Don't tell me this is not an impactful set. Like, it's just not on the power level of the nonsense that was Ikoria, Theros, and Throne.
It'd be interesting to see if, like, almost we're getting a tone back on the power levels of sets after seeing how, I would say, almost detrimental to the newer sets that Throne was.
Yeah, it feels bad. It almost feels like we're in a Mercadian mass cycle.
Kaladesh, that was another one, right? Like when
Kaladesh was another problem where everyone looked at the following Ixalan sets and were like, ew.
Yeah, Ixalan and Amonkhet. Like, I mean, there were a few cards out of the Amonkhet block, right? But no, it was primarily Amonkhet. All Kaladesh until Kaladesh went away.
Yeah. And then it was all Amonkhet until Amonkhet went away. And then everyone looked at Ixalan and it was like,
oh, hey.
Ixalan really did nothing.
Like, we got Guild of Ravnica. That's dope. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Jerry, absolute blast. Hopefully we can get together again soon. Please stay up to date on our social medias so that you know when we are going to be posting new episodes. And we'll get this one up very shortly here. It's September 15th currently at time of recording, and it should be up before the weekend. But you all have a fantastic day. Stay safe out there, and hopefully we can run into some of you at SCGCon, and if not, that's fine. We'll see you at the next major event. But y'all have a good one.
Oh, snap.